Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
What guns?
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this down track.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot del H. I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no-goes based on the data you had for LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Delcom.
Go.
Ginsey.
Go.
Econ.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country in Shingle Springs, California, this is your host, John Almada. Trouble with the chat room tonight, and we're reloading the page as we speak, and I think I'm going to be able to get the connect to go here. Hey, tonight, I'm, number one, I'm feeling quite a bit better. I've had that H1N1 flu that came in, and it pretty much knocked my whole family out. Starting to feel quite a bit better, still got a bit of a cough, and I'm, as you can tell, I'm still on the mend, but tonight we're going to have Terry J., an intuitive messenger. She is quite an interesting gal. She does a lot of work with, of all things, animals, people who have autism, Alzheimer's, coma, strokes, etc. And she's got a lot of ability, I guess, with medical veterinary intuition. So we're going to have her on the show tonight, and she'll be coming on at about 8:30. And we're going to be, in the meantime, doing a little bit of the news. It turns out here on, what is this, 109, or io9.com, is talking about Ghostbusters 3, the movie. Yes, it's coming back. They're going to do it again. And it's been confirmed. It's Ivan Reitman, who directed Ghostbusters 2, is going to direct Ghostbusters 3. And the sequel takes place when the paranormal researchers reopen their ghost removal service after it's been closed for quite a few years. Oh, hi, Kathy. Good to see you. I'm still coughing, hon. Boy, and getting used to the studio again. I'm hanging in there, but I'm going to be coughing a bit tonight. So good to see you on, Kath. And, hey, I got to get with you so we can set up me getting on the show there with you on your next show. And we can look out of time because I actually go to work, you know, over there at that aerospace facility I work at. So I'll be looking forward to doing a show with you and work out a time. Let's see. Anyway, this Ghostbusters 3 thing is pretty interesting. I'm hoping that it's not going to be a kind of a passe, you know, sequel type thing where by the third time it's pretty well all worn out. Hopefully they'll have something fresh and new in there, and they'll bring in some you know, something new and interesting and funny. So, but it's good to see the good boys are still around, and hopefully it'll be all the original cast and maybe some new folks. So we'll see that going on. We've got Fort Delaware. This is from around Gloucester County towns from www.nj.com. They've got a story here that dated today. Surrounded by a moat filled with deep opaque water, the concrete walls of Fort Delaware rise majestically into the sky like the facade of an ancient castle. A single candlelit lantern guides visitors into the Sally Port, where more than 100 years ago, a private known only by his last name, Stefano, slipped while running down the stone stairway and fell to his death, hitting his head and snapping his neck on the floor, where the guests were now gathered. And I guess he shows up quite a bit. Fort Delaware historian Lee Jennings said guests have reported hearing a sound like a pumpkin being smashed on the floor in the area of Stefano's death. And with some insistence from the tour guide, the visitors continued into the fort. If there's anyone here with us, can you give us a sign? And everyone stood perfectly still, waiting for a response to the investigator's question. The only sound was silence until suddenly, and quote, "What was that?" a startled guest whispered to her friend. And from inside an empty and long abandoned stairwell came a series of mysterious sounds. "Was that you, Sergeant?" the investigator called into the stairwell, and it goes on and on here. But TAPS has been there. They've had quite a few run-ins there, although some people, especially someone I know real well, figured that some of the TAPS evidence was not the best and perhaps not even real. And I don't think so. I think that they were being on the level with their presentation of the evidence. So if you do ever get a chance, go out there and check out Fort Delaware. Definitely an interesting place. Let's see. Here we go. This is from TheExaminer.com, one of the best paranormal sources out there. Oh, my God. Oh, hi, Karen. I see Karen out there. We got guest 83866. And so it's good to see some people out there this Friday night. As you can tell, I've got my voice back, but it's I'm barely holding here. And I'm still coughing a bit. Excuse me. This story is TAPS and personal experiences. Last night's episode of Ghost Hunters featured two investigations, neither of which yielded any particularly captivating evidence of paranormal activity. Some of the claims regarding such activity at both locations were laid to rest as TAPS, doing what it often does best, came up with alleged phenomena. There were certain aspects of each case, however, that the team were unable to explain, and investigators had a good deal of what TAPS identifies as personal experiences, a popular phrase on the show that has come essentially to mean occurrences that are in some way witnessed by team members but are not formally documented and therefore cannot be relied on as evidence. And so it goes on to say here, certainly some personal experiences can be more noteworthy or relevant to a given investigation. Oh, Kathy's sitting there saying I sound so pitiful. I'm doing a lot better. Trust me, Kathy. Anyway, there have been instances of a kind of fusion between personal experiences and more tangible forms of evidence. Take last night's example of the slamming jail cell door with an investigator at the Cornwall Jail in Ontario, for example. The heavy door, which has been left open by the team, suddenly and loudly closed with force, and that was pretty evident, but it was off camera, and that's always the maddening part with this kind of investigation. I've been in situations on my investigations where we've had things happen like that, and it's just the most maddening thing because you're right in the presence of it, and yet you're only getting audio evidence, and it's that all-important video to see something that moved by itself, which would just be amazing, you know, to capture. Anyway, the heavy door, which had been left open by the team, suddenly loudly closed with force. The sound of the door closing was captured on audio, but there was no video footage or further proof other than the accounts of the investigators, since both they and the cameraman, although present, were turned away during the incident. The investigation, or I mean the occurrence, was probably the most significant aspect of the investigation, but the actual evidence to support it was relatively less substantial. So, you know, I look at paranormal evidence like that as a good, strong indicator, and I think that, you know, TAP sees it the same way. And again, you know, kind of harkening back to the second story tonight, where we talked about TAPs and some of the evidence that was called into question that they gathered. Here they are; they're back to their roots, and they're out there doing, you know, a lot of debunking. Yet they're having these experiences, and they're calling it, you know, right down in the middle. And when in doubt, throw it out is, I think, one of the terms they use. So anyway, I'm going to scroll this down because I'm seeing my friends all talk on there. So, hello to everybody. We've got a couple other guests coming on. Guest 3866 and guest 3926, welcome aboard. So anyway, yeah, we're going to be having in about 20 minutes, Terry J is going to be calling in, talking about all sorts of interesting things of clairvoyance, clairsentience, and clairaudience. And she's going to be an interesting person. I'm not even sure I have a chance to talk to her because I've been busy with catching up at work after 7 days of being off sick. And so I was not able to really get into talking with her this week, so I'm not sure if we're going to be able to have other, you know, people call in and talk with her and maybe do some readings online. So I'll kind of ask her if that when she does dial in and see if we can get a few callers in. So that's going to be something coming up. I'm going to do one thing too here. We did this last week, and I'm going to do it again. I have recharged and set up the EM pump that I got from my good friend Bill over at Digital Dowsing. So I have just turned on that pump, and now we've had in the studio a number of experiences here of late. When I go to do the show, I'm getting things happening here in the studio. You know, I'm on a haunted property here, so I'm using this pump to see if we can get maybe a little activity here. And so I just turned it on, and I'm setting it off to the side. And so we're going to see if we get any activity. And I'm going to also mention some things I got here. Very interesting thing here. I am a member of the American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena. And I get a newsletter from them about once every 3 months, and I just got this one in the mail. And I was just blown away by one of the articles they had. They did an article called Physical Processes Involved in Trans-Etheric Influences. And what this really is it's a lot of high-sounding science and big words that basically is saying how does it work that paranormal phenomena like EVP can actually be done with electronic gear or with basically anything that that spirits are able to manifest and change. And so there's quite a bit of interesting material, full diagrams, discussions about the energy states and how these things, wells of energy and possible states that spirits can influence with different energetic devices. It's all very neat stuff. It takes some time to really read through it and digest it, and I've been rereading it several times. But one area I'm going to take a kind of discuss here, especially with regard to EVP, which is one of my favorite areas of paranormal research because it's so easy to get great evidence with it. A decent quality recorder and a determined investigator can get, you know, some really top-notch evidence just going out there and, doing their thing with beating their feet out there and finding a spot and then working it, you know. So it's one of the easier ways to get paranormal evidence out there and pretty much is probably the predominant method out there for, inferring that there's spiritual activity. Anyway, oh, dang, John, you were bad off, poor thing. Oh, man. I was sick there for a while, my friend. 7 days, and then it's been another 7 of getting over this thing, but I'm still here. Slowly getting better. Tomorrow I'm going to be out working on the property, getting ready for winter, so it's going to be kind of a joke to watch me kind of cartwheeling around here trying to get this ranch ready. And I just got out of jury duty. Oh, God. I know it's my civic duty, but I hate going into court and watching the ridiculous thing that these people do to each other in there. And I hope that on the other side, when these people go there, they're going to have to sit for 100 years in a spiritual courtroom and just suck it up and have to pay back for all of the time they wasted of all the rest of us sitting there watching the stupidity that I see. I'm sorry, it's a real pet peeve with me. So anyway, I've got out of it till January, and I'm going to have to go there on January 12th and sit there and watch these people. And I don't know. I'm sorry. It just is it really ticks me off. I do not like jury duty. Anyway, and you know what? The bad part is once they find out I'm in the defense industry and that I've got family who are FBI, the defense attorney doesn't even want to talk to me. I wonder why. Of course, the fact that I think consider that, 9 times out of 10, the sucker's guilty of sin when they bring him in. Anyway, the prosecuting attorney usually has a good case by the time it gets there, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, we were talking about EVP. Sorry I went off on that tangent, but I was really glad to get out of that next week. What they're talking about here is one section of the article, I'm going to read this, is called applicability. And I'm going to just read basically the whole stanza here, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. It starts with applicability. To determine the applicability of this hypothesis, it's important to remember that there is necessarily an etheric to physical interface, meaning that there's some way they're actually influencing our EVP recorders and things like that. And that something like intention represents the etheric form of the influence, and some fundamental physical characteristic must be the physical form of the influence. So as with the audio signal represented in Figure 4, which I can see and you can't, the influence must be considered as a moment-to-moment application of influence to produce a general result, meaning they're actually able to physically influence the device. An economical solution requiring a minimum amount of energy should be expected, and that's somewhat what we notice when we do this EVP stuff. We notice that they don't tend to say a lot. It's usually 4 or 5 words, and then they stop, and I think it's because it takes a lot of their energy to do that. Is that how you got out of jury duty? What I have is I got a mother getting ready to go in for a foot operation with Kathy, and I've got the ranch to try to do by myself to take care of all this. So it's been this sickness did not come at a good time. I thought I had plenty of extra time, and I was down for 2 weeks. So anyway, we were talking about the minimum amount of energy that should be expected. Now here's the real kicker. In EVP, it is speculated that a specific component in an electronic circuit is used to inject the information. The component is most likely one with an active region, such as a transistor junction or the inner element region of a vacuum tube. It's also likely that a plasma field is more susceptible to influence than something like transistors and vacuum tubes. And what that means is that these active components, these particular things like transistors or vacuum tubes, as was done in the past with old tape recorders and things like that, are susceptible to etheric influence. So it's very, considering that you have memory units that are basically jam-packed with transistors in these new digital recorders, these things are basically almost custom-made to be EVP sensitive. And it's not surprising. Now, the thing that got me looking at this really hard is that now that there's this theory, I mean, this is a really very involved article, but it's one thing to go out and capture this stuff. It's another to actually sit down and, you know, construct a theory, even if possibly wrong, but use that as a basis to explore the influences and see if there is a possibility of building better devices. And, you know, we use a lot of off-the-shelf equipment. Yeah, Tesla machine, yeah. Some of the Tesla machines were, you know, tube-based and based on static electricity and things like that, and you're right, Kathy. I think that, you know, especially the two vacuum tube technologies and the older things like that probably could be explored some more. They tend to be probably even maybe a little more sensitive than some of the stuff we're using now, the digital, but that remains to be seen. But anyway, the whole theory of this, being able to sit down and formulate a scientific hypothesis, which what we've been after for years, and be able to take that and then turn that into trying things out on an experimental basis with a new type of circuit and exploring that on the basis of the theory, and then seeing what the result is. So for the first time, what I'm seeing out of this article is basically some attempt at doing this to put together a scientific, you know, basis of exploring the phenomena and then bettering the equipment that we as paranormal investigators are going to use. So this should come be something that a lot of people take more interest in. And I did find that I can reprint this article, so I'm going to scan this weekend and it comes up on my website. But I just am amazed at the stuff I'm seeing. I mean, they were getting into things here with the potential energy and decreased potentials, states of how the energy in the circuits is done and how these spirits can actually talk on the devices. So there's, and they even have other references. It's good to find out that there are other papers on this, one here called Computer-Based Analysis of Supposed Paranormal Voice. Robert May, The Chaotic Rhythms of Life. And here's another one called EVP Maker. I guess it's a piece of software that they're being used in some of this theoretical research. So there's a lot going on there. So if any of you who are listening are you know, into science and have a, you know, engineering background or electronics background, I tend to think that you should investigate this a little more. And hopefully we'll see some of these smart builder-type folks, kind of like the digital dowsing guy, you know, Bill Chappell, out there really pushing the envelope and using theory, you know, to drive us forward. Because I tend to think that in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see some devices come out on the basis of all of this. It's going to be just nothing short of amazing. And Bill Chappell is sending out newsletters, and I'm on his list. Where he's talking about early next year that they're going to be putting out a new device that's going to blow away everybody. If they thought that the ovulus was something else, wait till we see this. So obviously he's hit on something, and I think that we're going to end up seeing that become a real, you know, force in this business. And, you know, and I've got just about every device there is right now. I mean, I'm even sitting here, I've got the geophone, which I have to put together, and I don't have enough energy to do it this weekend, but it's staring me in the face. I'm looking at the circuit board right now and the little sensor. So I'm going to build a geophone and use that for other purposes. But, you know, for those of us who are real gadget freaks, I think it's going to be an interesting time. And hopefully, despite the fact the economy is tanking, we'll still be able to afford all this stuff. Kathy says, I think people are overthinking how to get EVP. Simpler can sometimes be the best. I do agree there, Kathy. I think that we're in a kind of a golden age with this whole subject, because if you take a look at the ability of some of the Sony ICD recorders and the Olympus digital recorders to get really high-quality EVPs, I'm not sure how much better we can do out there, but with this theory, maybe it'll make it easier for spirits to be able to you know, do the communication they need, and maybe the, you know, lowering some barriers for them. If we just tune this equipment a little better, we might get a lot more out of them. And, you know, one last thing, you know, before we cut to break, and then we get into talking with our guests. One of the areas this article didn't go into was it was very geared to the theory and all that kind of thing, but it doesn't talk about the personal reasons these entities have for talking with us. And I'm kind of a big believer that most of these folks are going to be earthbound. They're not going to have crossed. Some may have. Often we're going to run into residuals, which I've got a number of EVPs that I think are residual, which picked up of an animal. That I know there were no animals there, and yet I picked up this animal sound about 2 months ago and was just blown away by it. So these things do happen. But what I think that is interesting in this is they don't talk about the spirit being aware of how the electronics works. And what I think is happening with EVP is we've got an understanding of in some kind of a theory now. But I also think that what's going on is spirits, just by their kind of their proximity to the recorder, are affecting this stuff without even trying. And some may be actually better at it than others. And I was thinking about this on the way home from work tonight, and it struck me that some spirits I've noticed tend to come through better than others. And if I keep going back to a site, I notice that things... I get the same spirits and the same sorts of things happen with them. And you get the same kind of, you can just kind of tell who's who. So I think that a spirit, once they die, does not just automatically become imbued with electronic knowledge. I think what happens is that just by the nature of their makeup, they affect the electronics. And that's what we're getting. So I know I've jawboned on this for quite a bit, and it's 8:26, and we're going to be having our guest on in about 4 minutes. So I'm going to go ahead and take a brief break and go get some check. I forgot to bring you into the studio, and my throat is demanding it. So I'm going to put on some music and say hello to all my guests here. Well, we've got guest 4065, and Karen is still out there, and so is Kathy. Some people can attract spirits better than others. I do agree with that. I agree with that a lot. So let's go ahead and find some music. And let's see. We'll throw a little Ghost Riders on. And I'll be back in about 3 to 4 minutes. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. Thank you. Ghost Rider. And there's quite a few of us now in our team. They're kind of all spread out right now. I got one in Ohio, and I got a couple out in Nevada, and some locally here. And everybody's kind of off in their own space these days. We're trying to get the team all back together. It's like herding cats, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, we're going to go ahead. I see our caller is on the line, Terry J., Intuitive Messenger. So I'm going to go ahead and intro her. It says here, all of us are born intuitive. Intuition is just one part of the spiritual senses of clairvoyance, clairsentience, and clairaudience. Together, they allow us to pick up on higher vibrations. Quantum physics tells us that everything in the universe has a vibration or frequency. We have all of the option... we all have the option of developing our spiritual senses to pick up these higher vibrations. Terry J. is a unique individual that has taken it to the nth degree, and she considers herself very blessed that she has two mentors in life that taught her to have no ego, no stake in the outcome of the session, and no judgment on the information that was coming through. They taught her to just get out of her own way and no thinking aloud, just feel for the information and relay it. And that's often the sign of some of the best intuitives, mediums, or psychics, whatever you want to call that. And there's many people have funny things about those words, but I think they all kind of meld together at some point. So we're going to go ahead and pick up the phone and introduce her. So, Terry, are you on with us?
Yes, John. How are you?
Hey, recovering from H1N1, but I am here, and I cough a little bit, but I'm still here, and I'm kicking, so.
Well, that's good. Now you've got good immunity.
Oh, my God. Thank God I don't have to take that shot. That's a rotten way to get get immunity. It's my whole family was down, so we were crawling around here for about a week. Excuse me.
Oh, that doesn't happen.
Anyway, I'm not sure if you were able to hear on the circuit when I was just reading the first sentence from your website, and it talks about your two mentors that have taught you to have no ego and that kind of thing. Who are these mentors? Let's just jump in there, and then we can work our way through.
Well, I believe in the Buddhist expression that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And so at different times in my course of study, both of these women came in, and they were both energy healers. So they figured that what I was doing was pretty much the same, so that I just needed to, not have an ego, that ego is the bane of the existence of trying to do this work, and because ego means easing God out, and to just get out of my own way. So they were both really instrumental also in helping me to heal my issues. Because I think you can only help others to the degree that you've been healed. So it's just been a tremendous, tremendous journey with both of them. And both of them actually have books out now. Deborah King has Truth Heals. She's a Hay House author. And her website, I think, is Truth Heals. And then the other one is Sarah Honeycutt. And her website is coreempowerment.com. And she has a book out by the same name. Good stuff, really good stuff.
Well, how did you get started in all of this? We'll start at the beginning. I mean, what prompted you to get into this line of work and take it from there?
Well, I tell you what, I am the biggest skeptic in the world. Even after I'd been doing this for quite a few years, I had a friend say, "You ought to go do readings at the metaphysical bookstores." And I said, "Why? Aren't they all quacks or frauds?" And they were hysterical laughing. They said, "No, some of them are like you." And I went, "Oh, I didn't know that," because I'd never even been in a metaphysical bookstore, if you can imagine that. So what happened is I was doing horseback therapy with disabled kids, and I picked one of the kids up out of his wheelchair and put him on the back of one of the horses, and he said, "Ouch, I have a cramp in my hip." And I looked at him and I said, "You have a cramp? Well, here, sit this way. It'll take the cramp out." Having cramps is pretty normal for a child that has cerebral palsy, so it wasn't a big deal. I certainly wasn't worried about it, but I just didn't want him to be uncomfortable. So anyway, we chatted and chatted and chatted and, finished our lesson, and I took him off the horse and put him back in his wheelchair, and he went back to class. And the gal that was helping me said, "Boy, he sure is talking good." And I said, "Well, he's very bright." just because he has cerebral palsy doesn't necessarily mean that he's retarded. And she said, Terry, he didn't say a word. He can't, remember? And I mean, you know, I just caught my breath and went, oh, my Lord, I know I heard him. She said, I know you heard him. So I went into the classroom. By that point, they had put a band around his head with a pointer attached to it, and he typed out on his computer, horse lady can hear me. So I had confirmation at that point. I mean, he was just trying to tell his teacher. He didn't know that I was going to be coming back in the classroom. And I stood there in just shock. And then, of course, I carried on a conversation with him and was totally aware that there were no words coming out of his mouth. I was basically reading his mind. So when I went back outside, this darling person said, well, you ought to learn to communicate with the horses because it's the same thing. And then wouldn't that make your program really safe? You know, because the horses seemed like the only liability when you're doing horseback therapy.
Yeah.
So I just decided I wanted to be a, you know, an animal communicator is what it was called at the time. And I didn't want to get into any other woo-woo stuff. I mean, I'm not kidding. I didn't want to do any woo-woo stuff. And about a year into it is when I heard, you know, about a year into doing it, and I was just doing it part-time and just sort of piddling around with it, and but at the same time trying to do a good job. And, of course, once you start trying, then you can't do anything at all. So the two mentors came into my life and really got me on the straight and narrow and got me to look at my issues and helped me to heal. And about a year into doing readings is when I heard my first dead person. And you could have knocked me over with a feather. And I just knew that it was the right thing to do to share the information with the client that I had on the phone because she was so missing her daughter who had passed away. And so I talked with her and communicated with the daughter, and I thought, well, that's pretty weird. I don't know that I want to do that again. And I had all kinds of people encouraging me and telling me about other mediums that were on television. And you should have seen me roll my eyes. That's seriously, it was like, oh, please. Anyway, I really just wanted to be a pet psychic, and I really think that man plans and God laughs. And so what happened is that as I started doing more readings and finding out about how disease is caused by issues in the tissues and, you know, that all disease is curable. It's, you know, my practice just sort of went down its own path. And so whatever came through in a session, there was no resistance from me to whatever was coming through. I just basically became a messenger. So all I do is relay information.
Okay. And so how does that work for you? I mean, when you go into a session, let's just say I walked in and sat with you.
Well, it would be on the phone.
Oh, okay. Let's say I did that. I'd pick up the phone, I'd call you, and I just say my name, and then what happens?
Well, usually people call me because they're having problems and they have questions. And so we just start going down their list of questions. And it's so cool because as they're asking me the question, I'm being given the answer. The answer doesn't come from me. I always tell everybody, you know, I'm not that bright, so I can't know this stuff. And so basically I'm given the information. Sometimes it's a word, sometimes it's a feeling, sometimes it's a visual image. And so I just try to, it's like playing charades in a fog through a keyhole. That's about what it's like.
if I had to describe it. Yeah, in a far distant past, I did a little experiment with reading myself, and I never really kept up with it. But I discovered that I could touch people, actually touch their arms usually, and I could get medical information about them. And I had no way of knowing how I knew this stuff, but it was dead certainty what I was picking up.
And oh, absolutely, because it's not coming from you.
Yeah, it was the strangest thing, and the thing I found, what I saw that just resonated with me was how tough it was to actually get out of your own way and go, just repeat what you're hearing and don't edit.
We always want to think about it. And it's so, you know, when you do this work, you want to help. You want to help people. You're basically coming from healership. And so you certainly don't want to relay information that's wrong. And yet, if you, the minute you start worrying, oh, was that right? Was that clear? You're in trouble because, you know, the minute you start thinking or trying to figure it out or, oh, my goodness, I don't know what that is, then you're going to get the wrong stuff. You're going to get nothing at all. And what we don't realize when we're doing this work is a lot of it has to deal with the openness of the person on the other end of the phone, too, because their energy has a role in the session, too, and they can actually block information coming through. And so it gets pretty frustrating when you're picking up on stuff and hearing, no, no, you know, and, of course, you know, I've done that for an hour and then 2 days later gotten a 5-page email about why every single thing I got for them made perfect sense now. It didn't then, but, it does now because they were able to, you know, talk about it with other family members.
Well, I think, you know, John Edwards kind of says it. I've got one of his books, and he said it pretty well, that people get kind of a psychic amnesia. They're on the spot, and their brain just kind of just takes a vacation while they're trying to search themselves, you know. And so I think that, you know, that might be some of it that you're running into, that they just, they're so worked up emotionally and spiritually about, you know, being in the presence of somebody with ability is helping them, that they kind of lose that, you know.
Yeah. My problem is I think everyone does this, and so I have weird conversations. Yeah, and then I just think, oh, wait, I'm the only one that's seeing that aura, or I'm the only one that is seeing the cancer in that man's body, or, you know, I'm the only one that's seeing that that person is a child molester, you know, and it's like, you know, because I'll see somebody like that and just, you know.
Well, how long ago did this actually start for you? And you just had no awareness that you had this until the horse, you know, events that happened. But when did that happen?
1990.
So you've been at this a while now.
About almost 20 years, but it just doesn't seem like it. It just really doesn't seem like it. I've only been doing it. I didn't want to give up doing the handicap writing program. I really didn't want to give it up. But I ended up getting divorced in 2003, finally. You know, that started about, I'd say, 2001. And after 9/11, you couldn't fund a nonprofit. It was impossible. So, you know, the handwriting was on the wall, and it was just obvious that I had to give up the handicap program. And so I thought, oh, what the heck? I'll, you know, just make a go of doing these phone readings. I had a website, and I just really love it. It's my new passion. And, you know, someday I'll go back to doing the horseback therapy again because I just love doing it. But I really love watching miracles happen with this work on a daily basis. You know, when you get somebody and they call you and they say, you know, I'm dying, I have lymphoma, and you go, oh, just quit worrying about it. Go get some energy healing done and you'll be fine. You know, and, of course, guess what? They're fine. They get energy healing done, they work on their issue, and they end up being okay. And that just gives you such a good feeling, you know, to be able to point out to them, well, this is an issue, you know, it has to do with your marriage, you know, many, many years ago. You've never resolved the issues from that marriage, and so that's what you need to do. And it ends up being the truth, and the energy healing helps them. So sometimes I feel really like the messenger.
Huh. Well, I know the feeling. When I did do readings like that, it was a very, just sometimes it was so disturbing that I was picking up and I would just have to just say it and just trust that, you know, somewhere in some part of them would hear it. Sometimes it was the very disturbing of them. And you'd have to kind of change your
word. Say that last word again?
Well, sometimes. Am I breaking up?
Yeah, you're getting garbled.
Yeah, I might have to switch to the backup phone here. Am I coming through better now?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay. What I was saying was that sometimes people are not able to hear exactly what you're telling them, or you're telling them something that they really don't want to hear. I'm sure you get that quite a bit.
Oh, my goodness, people that are in resistance, oh, goodness, yes, all the time. And I'm kind of plain spoken, and so we just use our plain spokenness and just jump right in, and I'll be, you know, teasing or cajoling someone and just say, listen, do I need to reach through the phone and knock you up beside the head, because this is what the issue is and this is what you need to work on? And so I just sort of tease them into it. But, you know, when you see the results, it's incredible. And there's just been so many times, when the results are just so fantastic. And, you know, it's just so neat, you know, when it happens.
Well, I've got a question from the chat room here from Kathy over at, she's another host and a great friend of mine from back east. Says here, question for Terry, does she feel she tends to forget many times the readings she gives, as it's not hers to keep?
Do I forget the readings as soon as they're done?
Yeah.
Was that the question? Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree with that. I think that's just something, it feels like a river runs through you, and then, you know, you just go on to the next thing, and then you go, 2 days later, you're going, what was that thing? You know, how'd that work? You know, and I guess you tape, you know, you encourage people to tape them and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I absolutely do, because, and they'll even say, what did you say 10 minutes ago? And it's like, what? 10 minutes ago? I have no idea what I said 10 minutes ago. You're like a translator. It's the same thing as, you know, a translator at the UN doesn't remember anything that they translated, because
yeah,
they're just in the moment translating. And so it's really, really similar to that. You know, it's so important to not own the information. You know, that's the important part, is to not own the information. Just get it and share it.
Now, I'm not sure if you're open to doing some readings online here, but I do have a caller from 415 area code. Are you up for maybe doing a little online reading?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and take this call? And caller from 415 area code, I'm going to go ahead and put you on. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. This is Janine. Terry, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Okay, sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm very intuitive. You know, like when I talk to my friend Scott, you know, I just pay attention. I breathe and ground. And, you know, I pay attention to the messages. But other times I just can't do it. You know, that I get the information wrong. And I want to know, how do you stay in that zone where you're capable of just receiving messages all the time? I've just been doing so much research on, you know, the psychic stuff, and I just want to be able to master it.
Well, I think by trying not to master it and getting more out of your own way is the only way that it's going to happen. And
well, what do you mean?
When someone is learning to ground, it's really funny watching them. You know those noisemakers we have at New Year's, where you blow on them and they uncurl and then they curl back up?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny when somebody's learning how to ground, that's what their roots look like. They grow them down, they curl back up. They grow them down, they curl back up. So it's almost like you have to be really vigilant on checking your ground, to where you can take 2 seconds and you know you're grounded. And because if you're not grounded, especially if you get concerned about giving the right information, then you've gone into ego and you're just not going to get it.
Oh.
You know, if you go into ego, go do something else.
Okay.
You know, go do something else. But the minute you get worried about being right, you won't get anything. You know, this actually happened to me. About 4 or 5 years into it, I was doing some veterinary intuition, and the person called me back and said, thanks for all your help, but that wasn't it. So I was devastated by that. And just the fact that I was devastated that I didn't help or get the right answer meant that I had slipped into ego. And I said, I'm quitting. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to quit. I just can't do this. If I'm not right, then there's no sense in doing it. And, of course, my friends who were healers were hysterical, holding their sides, rolling on the floor, laughing, telling me I'm in ego, and me, you know, insisting I was not in ego. I just wanted to be right. So you really have to work at just staying out of your own way and staying grounded and stop thinking, you know, especially if you're real left-brained where you're, you know, doing stuff that's analytical all day. You're going to have a, you know, you're going to really get into that wanting to analyze the information that's coming through, and that doesn't help at all either. Because, you know, there's so many times when I say, you know, this doesn't make any sense to me. This is what I'm getting, and I'll just try to describe what I'm getting. And in 2 seconds, you've got the client on the other end in tears going, oh, my God, I know what that is. So you just have to get more out of your own way.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's funny. I'm a senior programmer for a defense company, and you know, I've been intuitive my whole life, and my whole family all have different gifts. And I was kind of laughing there when I was listening to that all that because you know, despite the fact I'm in such an analytical business, I go with my gut on most of what I do, day in, day out. And I find myself using my abilities in my work, and I just think that that's I've just learned to just when I see something and my gut tells me immediately that this is the right thing to do or this is the wrong thing to do, and I hold my ground. I do a lot better than if I kind of give in to reason. I don't know if that makes sense, but it just seems that I just had a case of it. My boss walked in and a technique that totally was the wrong thing to do. I had already done the right thing, and I started doubting myself. And I was in the car coming home tonight thinking about it, and I went, wait a minute, you know, I was right, and I'm not backing off. So I'm going to stick to my guns on this technique that I'm doing because I know it's the right thing, and it's just that it's almost like in your solar plexus when you know you're hitting on it and you're keying it, you know, correctly. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Well, that third chakra and third chakra, you know, is solar plexus, and that is where we pick up on feelings. That's our, you know, one of our feeling centers. You know, it's amazing how the chakras actually are a part of this whole scenario. That, you know, we get aha moments down through the top of our head in our crown chakra. We get feelings in our gut, which is, you know, our third chakra. And, you know, you can just pick up different things in different parts of your body, like your third eye, which is your sixth chakra. That's where we actually have clairvoyance. That's where clairvoyance is located in our body.
Yeah, it's funny because I notice, especially when there's something that's, I feel like there's something very important about to happen, or there's something that, you know, potentially is dangerous in the environment around me. I always call it, basically switching on, and I feel like I've got a coin placed right on the front of my forehead, and it's pressing, and that's when I know something's up, and then I start looking around and try to, you know, figure out what's going on. And that's just common throughout my whole family. We all seem to have that, so we kind of just joke about it, but I do think that that is third eye, and I think that that's just, you know, your body is sensing this stuff, and that's kind of a way of telling you, hey, look around, there's something going on here, you know.
It's really good when we do tune into our bodies, because our bodies will tell us all kinds of things about our own environment. They really will.
Yeah, and, you know, with regard to some of the cases you've done and some of the things you've done, what sticks out in your mind as some of the more memorable things that you've had happen and the miracles you've seen and been part of?
Oh, let's see. I think really the one person that was diagnosed with lymphoma and was given a death sentence and turned around, and 2 weeks later they couldn't find any. You know, 2 weeks after the healing, they couldn't find any lymphoma on the scan that the person had. I'd say that was pretty incredible. There's just been so many. When I have a client that has horrific self-destructive behaviors, you know, they're anorexic or bulimic or something from childhood sexual abuse that they don't even remember that they were molested, you know, they don't have any conscious memories of it, and you're able to bring that to them and help them to heal from that, I think there's so many of them. I mean, I had a thing with my cat, my own cat, last night. Well, it was two nights ago, and I tried to explain to my cat that my roommate, who's just a big old softy, was not the bad man who 6 years ago at the house did something to her that really traumatized her before we moved her. We left her for last. And I had just sat down. I said, listen, you just got to stop this. This is a really nice man. He's just like the daddy we used to have, meaning my ex-husband. And so I had this talk with her, and the very next night, my roommate's in the hallway. The cat turns and looks at him and goes, oh, it's you. He walks over and starts petting her. And this cat, he never even saw her, because if he was getting close to the entrance of my door, the cat was gone. That's how skittish she was from him. So we've had our own little miracle here in the house, and now I'm kicking myself going, why didn't I just explain this to her months ago? You know what I mean?
I hear you.
So there's just so many healings that go on. There's so many horses. I love to work with horses, you know, because I'm a lifelong horsewoman. And I love working with them, and you've got the owner who is just sick because they've got this, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 barrel horse, and all of a sudden the barrel horse isn't working and not turning the barrels, and it's getting dangerous, and it's flipping over backwards. And I'm able to discern by getting out of my own way what the problem is, whether the horse needs chiropractic or acupuncture. And, you know, I get those tearful phone calls saying, oh, my God, I've got my horse back. It's a perfect horse. I can't thank you enough. And that really just makes me feel really good. I love those kinds of calls, too. And communicating with people who can't. I still shake myself about that. There was a gentleman in Hawaii. It was the uncle of my client, and her and I were communicating, and I said, you know, do you want to talk to him? This gentleman had been in a coma from a ruptured brain aneurysm, and the family was being asked to disconnect life support.
Yeah.
And I said, do you want to talk to him? And, of course, she said, oh, goodness, yes, absolutely. So we communicated with him, and I got information from him that there's no way that I could have known. You know, I smelled coffee, but it smelled raw or something. And she said, well, he's a coffee farmer. And I went, okay. And, I mean, every single thing that came through was like that. Like, there was an absolute explanation for everything that I got in that session, because this guy was so clear, because I was tapping into his subconscious. And anyway, I asked him if he wanted... if he was staying or going. And, I didn't share this with my client. I just said to him, are you staying or are you going? And he sort of shrugged his shoulders. And it was so cute because he was sitting on a fence. And I thought, that's so telling. It was so symbolic. Anyway, I said, do you want them to get energy healing for you? And he said, sure. You know, him and I had that conversation. Well, anyway, I think he had 3 energy healing sessions and woke up out of the coma with no residual damage. And this is a guy they were going to terminate life support on him. So that one really sticks in my mind pretty strongly.
Well, we've got a question from one of the people in the... I'm going to have to scroll back to get it. From a person named Swatton Live. Not sure what all that means, Swatton, so you'll have to tell me later, but... question for Terry. I'm concerned about my health. How can I be a medical intuitive for myself?
You can. I think it's just a matter of getting out of your own way again and just listening to your body. And there's lots and lots of good resources to where if you have a symptom. Let's say you've got irritable bowel syndrome. You know, you've been diagnosed, you've got irritable bowel syndrome. Well, irritable bowel syndrome is always, always, always an unresolved childhood issue. So then it's a matter of getting the energy healing done and rescuing that inner child, and the irritable bowel syndrome will just disappear. So it's a matter of knowing which chakra is impacted and then what that means. So if it's, let's say it's digestive issues. Digestive issues are always going to be a power, ego, and control, issue. I mean, it just depends. If it's your throat, you know, I have a lot of clients, they'll have thyroid issues. They'll either have Hashimoto's or Graves, or, you know, their thyroid will be off. And that's always from not speaking your truth. And they almost get affronted, like, I never lie. And it's, well, you might not lie to other people, but you might be lying to yourself about your happiness, about what you want to do with your life. You might not have, you know, you might need to take your power back from somebody who's, you know, insulted you or something. And it doesn't even have to involve the other person, which makes it so cool. Because it's just you taking your power back, and it really has nothing to do with the other person. So it's really cool. It just really depends on, you know, knowing what part of your body is impacted health-wise, and then determining what chakra, what issues are with that chakra, so to speak.
You know,
does that
funny.
Help?
Yeah, I think for that, I think that's Swanton here is really happy with what you're saying. In the chat room here, I was just wondering, things like H1N1, what I just went through, you know, and I'm dealing with this cough, and I'm, you know, it's just kind of sticking with me a little bit, but I'm getting better. What are the reasons people do get something like this? I mean, is there a lesson to be learned, or, you know, is this what the flu represents for people?
I mean, I think people that get the flu, there's a lot of things that can cause it. I think people get afraid of it. That's the biggest thing, is that they're taught to be afraid of it by the media. I mean, the media and the powers that be operate on a fear base 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, I remember some of the, you know, elections. It was like, you know, I think it was when Cheney or somebody who said, well, if we don't get elected, the Taliban's going to overrun the country. And it was like, oh, please. And people bought that. They believed it, you know. So I think a lot of it has to do with fear. We go, oh, my God, I hope I don't get it. I hope I don't get it. I hope I don't get it. And we know how the law of attraction works, is that what we resist persists. So just our fear of it is enough to pull it into us. The other thing, too, is that some of us just don't take care of ourselves. Some of us work too hard and work too many hours and don't take enough time off. Does that sound like anybody we know?
That would be me.
Oh, my goodness. So I always say that God's way of making you take a vacation.
Yeah, I was 7 days flat on my back, and we pretty much camped out. And it's funny, I started picking up a book on mediumship, and basically it talked about how I needed to meditate more. And so I've been making a little more time for myself, and suddenly I'm starting to feel better. So,
the other thing too is if it's one of those things, too, I've seen this with a lot of people. They're saying, should I get the shot or should I not? Should I get the shot or not? Should I get the shot or not? And they go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And they're so focused on just that one idea, should I get the vaccination or the vaccine or not, that pulls the disease in. Just that worrying about should they get it or not. You know, is it some – I mean, I've ever heard people say, oh, there's some sort of marker that's going to be in there where they'll be, you know, Big Brother will be able to track you if you get a flu shot. Oh, my God, please.
They can't even get bills passed on time. How are they going to track whatever you and I are doing?
Exactly. And who cares? You know, who cares? So I've just heard all kinds of paranoia because of the vaccine. And my feeling is I'm taking good care of myself, I'm resting, I get really good nutrition, and the other thing is I'm a happy camper. And you're not going to like me telling you this, but there is no room in a happy body for disease.
I would agree with that. We've been, you know, I mean, in my line of work and all the things that have been going on in just my own life, I've seen a lot of tragedy in the last 2 years, and I've really worked hard to keep my attitude up and to keep positive and focused as best I can.
But you haven't allowed yourself to grieve. That's the problem.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, with my father having the stroke and everything here 2 years ago, I've had to step up and deal with, you know, this ranch and the things that we have going on here. And I'm one man, and I've had to kind of let some things go and be able to, you know, focus on what's important. You know, I know what you're saying. It's just sometimes you are just forced into a situation that you have to deal with what you have to deal with. The problem is I tend to take on, and I'm, you know, this is self-analytical here, I take on more than I can do on a regular basis, and I have to really struggle to pull back and only do what I'm supposed to be doing. So I think that's a lot of it. It's just I've been, you know, burning the candle at a lot of ends, and I've had to kind of pick and choose, you know.
You know, John, the other thing that you're not dealing with is your inner child is angry that you've had to take on this responsibility. Your inner child is saying, I'm doing enough already. Why do I have to do this too? And so if there's a way to make a deal with that inner child and get that inner child happy, then you'll feel better. Give a reward to that inner child.
That's why I'm here doing these radio shows. And that's why I'm out doing, paranormal investigation. I decided that if I can't be effective in helping other people, if I'm not happy myself,
right?
And so I've had to kind of tone things down a little bit because of economic realities and different things like that. But I agree with what you're saying. I mean, you're right on the money. It's there was some. I had to shoulder a fairly large load when this all came in, and there were some fiscal things that happened, and I haven't had a problem really with a lot of it. But you know, you look at other folks, and their lives are going pretty easy, and you go, geez, you know, I wonder. And so I agree. I mean, you can't help but feel those things when you've had something like this happen. But at the same time,
absolutely,
you get up and you just going, you know, and you do it because you love people. You know, I love my parents, and I'm the one holding things together. So, you know, inner child, yeah, I agree. There's some hurt there, but, you know, what do you do?
Well, the thing is you can actually make deals with the inner child. That's the thing. You can actually make deals with the inner child that, you know, listen, if you just allow me, the adult, to get this stuff done, then I'm going to take you fishing, or I'm going to take you to do something fun that you like to do. And it's so amazing because you can just pull that inner child into your heart, and they stay in your heart, and they're happy, and they're not sabotaging you like by giving you swine flu, you know.
Well, I agree with that. I like that idea because I've got October 30th. I'm going to be heading I try to promise myself twice a month that I could go do paranormal investigation because I just love the hell out of that. And this
are you
going to
be in Truckee?
Yeah, I'm going to Truckee.
Oh, cool. Holler if you need any help. That's about a half hour from me.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. How did you know it was Truckee?
Oh, my God. I'm like psychic.
And
it's it's also on your website.
Oh, you're so good. We're going to be going out there. And I've got tomorrow to call and get all the reservations and stuff dealt with, but I felt so bad last week. I just didn't want to do anything. I was just sitting there, this sucks. So I feel a lot better now. And hopefully Karen over in Arizona is going to make it out. But if you wanted to come out and do that, we're going to have, I think there's going to be another intuitive is going to be there doing some work from our neck of the woods here. And, heck, two of you, it'd be kind of neat to have a couple out there working together. I'll have to talk with you some more about it after the show.
Sure.
But it's going to be a hoot. I mean, where are you at? Actually, I never really...
I'm just south of Reno.
Oh, my. Yeah, you're right up the hill from me. I'm over here in Shingle Springs, just south of Placerville.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What you do is I might just have to... We'll have to meet and shake hands here.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, and you know what? I'm not sure we still have that 415 caller on the line. I don't know if she left, but if you're on, hon, you might want to hang up because of the long distance charge. But anyway, so And if anybody else wants to call in and talk to Terry, the number is 646-478-0377. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show, and we're just clipping right along here. Let's see. What things are you having that are going to come up for you in the next 6 months or so, and things that you're planning on doing, and things that you want to do? Let's go into what you're all about.
Well, one of the big things that I'm doing in February, I'm still shaking my head over this one, is I've been invited to speak at the Western Veterinary Conference in Las Vegas, and that's next February. I know. I keep going, they wanted me? Because I'm just shaking my head over that. But there's a lot of veterinarians that actually recommend me, because I do the veterinary intuition as well as the medical intuition. And it's really going to be interesting. I'm going to be talking about the joy of euthanasia and what it's like from the animal's perspective, because it's incredible from the animal's perspective. It just sucks for us. And how they are all using medical intuition without giving it any acknowledgement. And then if they would understand how well it works, that it would save them a lot of aggravation and money testing with their clients, just to encourage them to really allow the medical intuitive aspect of their being to take over. So that's pretty exciting. I'm still shaking my head over that one, though. But coming up October 24th, I will be in San Jose, California, and I will be doing a workshop where I teach other people how to do what I do. And it's so cool, because by the end of the day, everybody is doing readings for everybody else. It's just amazing how fast it works. And I love to teach it. So I'm doing that one, and then I'm having another one in Reno on November 14th, another training session, and that'll just be probably out in Washoe Valley where I live, which is about 20 minutes south of Reno, and it's the same thing. And then December 5th, in conjunction with the National Finals Rodeo, I'll be doing one in Las Vegas, and that's at the Hampton Inn and Suites in Henderson, Nevada, which is just a few miles south and a little bit east of Las Vegas. Lots of workshops coming up. I'm trying to get my book finished so that I can get it published before the first of the year. I've got a lot of people that have contributed to it with their own stories and, how they had a reading and it changed their life, that sort of thing. And the book is also going to have a really great how-to portion in it, and the how-to portion will actually be finished and out as an e-book before the 24th of October. So lots of stuff going on, and I'm doing tons of radio. I love doing radio. It's so much fun.
Yeah, and you contacted me, and I was so happy I put that out there, because all these people are showing up now at my door, and I'm going, ooh, I can pick you and you and you. And so you showed up first, and I was like, come. That sounds like a hoot. I'll have her on, and I'm glad to have met you.
Oh, you too. You too. I hope I get to get over to Truckee and meet you in person and maybe even help out. I did guided tours to Bowers Mansion. I don't know if you've ever been there when you've been on this side of the hill, but Bowers Mansion is it's a Silver Era or Comstock Era mansion that's across the valley from me. And there was a whole paranormal team there while I was conducting these tours, and I was answering questions as the previous owners. So I was channeling the previous owners and answering questions of them. And it was a hoot. It was an absolute riot. But as the day went on and I got more and more tired, I got less out of my own way. I mean, more out of my own way. And so I would just point out to the investigators, there's a real big bunch of energy like up there by the transom, and somebody would get a chair and a ladder and they'd go up there with their little meters and go, oh my goodness, how did you find that? It was pretty fun. Because I just got to where I could, pick up on where there was stuck energy in the house. It was really fun.
Well, you know what? We have a real love of going over the hill to Virginia City and all around that area, and I've never heard of this mansion. So, you know what? I'm going to be talking with you.
Great.
Yeah. Well, hey, we got a caller from 623 area code, so we're going to. This will probably be the last call of the night. It's 9:17, so let's go ahead and pick this. And this is caller. You're on the air. 63 area code.
Hi. Hi, John. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Great show tonight. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've got a question. I was wondering if maybe you could help me. I've got a little problem. Long story, I have a birth mother who I hunted down years ago and talked to her. I wouldn't say it was the best of meetings, but all it's been, 10 years or so, and all of a sudden I find out she's hunting for me on the internet. She's looking for me. And I've been kind of hesitant to, like, answer her emails and that, and I was wondering if maybe you could give me some insight on maybe what she wants right now and if I should contact.
Oh, I want to go to you. I want to go to you, Sweetie Pie, because what you're doing is you're angry at her, so you're trying to punish her by withholding. Okay? So the issue isn't with her and what she wants from you. What I get very strongly from her is that previously when you contacted her, she was not in a good space to allow you into her life. That's changed. Okay, something's changed in her life where she now feels more comfortable making contact with you, okay?
Okay.
And the part of you that's in resistance is that old inner child anger, wanting to punish her for abandoning you and then you tracking her down and then her not having, you know, a warm, fuzzy reception, okay? What I would recommend to you is to go ahead and make the contact, because it just feels like her circumstances have changed, and for whatever reason, she is now comfortable having a relationship with you. It doesn't feel like she wants something from you or anything like that, okay?
That's what I was kind of afraid of, that, you know, she wanted something from me.
No. I think she just was not in a good place. Connection-wise, when you first made contact with her,
yeah,
and it feels like that's really changed drastically. So it you know, may turn out to be a much better relationship, you know, this time around. So, you know, don't ever get that feeling that now it's too late. You never want that feeling, okay?
Yeah.
And you know what she did for you is really, really in your best interest.
You still have issues.
You still have abandonment issues, though, so I would really encourage you to work on that with an energy healer. I really would. You know, like the book that I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, Core Empowerment is the website.
Core Empowerment.
Core Empowerment. Get that book and then schedule a session either with Sarah Honeycutt or one of the healers that she's got on her site. They're all so good. I would go to any one of them. I really would.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You have a great night.
You too.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in. And, you know, the one thing that I would say is she does want something from this lady. And I think that what that is just understanding and love. So
yes. But
yeah.
But she was worried. She was worried that it was like something like she wanted money or something like that, and I wasn't getting that at all. She's finally ready to have a relationship, is what it feels like.
Yeah, there was definitely
something previous where it just wasn't a good time.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just not the right time, you know.
Right.
And try to force things, you know, for whatever reason we think we know best, and sometimes. Life just has a way of, you know, coming around to things when it's going to be time to do it, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope I hope it's a good experience for her. And thank you for calling in. And go ahead and stay on the line. That is that a lot of the kind of thing that you went into in your readings? I mean, do you get a lot of this this sort of people with different kinds of pain that they're carrying that they come in with, and they think it's outside of them, and it really is inside of them?
Boy, you know what? It just runs the gamut. I was taught early on there are no limits, and with Source, all things are possible. So I just feel like an intermediary, and just whatever is going to come up, I just can deal with it. And I'm perfectly happy saying, you know what, I haven't got a clue. But luckily that doesn't happen too often, and especially even, this is so funny, if I say that, it's like the next instant I'm getting information. So as soon as I go into that surrender, then I immediately start getting information. It's pretty funny.
It's funny. In 2000,
sometimes I just say it just to get it, just to get into surrender again.
Yeah. Well, I had a situation where I was kind of thrust into a situation with a relative who was passing, and it was very he had mesothelioma, and I didn't know how I did it, but I had a family who didn't know what to do. I'm watching my uncle who's passing, and we had never met his relatives before, and so I was sort of in the middle of all this, and I found myself suddenly having knowledge. I had no way of knowing how I knew it, but I knew everything that was going to happen with how they were preparing him, the hospital personnel were preparing him to pass, and I was able to tell them everything they needed to know, and my aunt was there with me, and she's looking at me like I'm from the moon, and I'm going, I don't know where I'm getting this, but it's just coming out. So I would just say it. And these people all came and thanked me after he passed and asked me how I knew all this. And I went, I don't know. And it finally occurred to me later that I had actually channeled this information. I was actually walking around channeling and comforting these folks. And
it's so cool when that happens. It's really... I love channeling information, and especially because we get to take no credit for it too. That's the best part.
Yeah, we're just a telephone, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody goes, "How do you know that?" I don't know.
Yeah, and you feel so tired at the end of it. You know, that's the part I've noticed is you get such a. Sometimes I get really cold, and I'll feel, I get the chills when I've done this. It's been years since I've really, really worked with it, but I notice I get cold or I get really, really tired, and I feel like I'm going through one heck of a workout. So,
I don't get tired, but I do get cold. I notice that after I do a lot of sessions, it's like your vibration gets so high. I don't know if we're, like, trying to leave the physical or what, but... I do get cold, absolutely. It can be the middle of summer, and I'll be in my office, and I've got on sweats, and I'm all bundled up, and I've got my foot heater going, and, and then I come outside, and it's like, God, it's hot out here. But doing it, get cold.
Yeah, I tend to get more cold, but there's occasionally when I've done channeling with, and this was a long, long time ago, 1995 time frame is when I was doing that. I experimented with it a bit and found that I was pretty good at it, but I would get so tired, and it was just I would get cold, but it just was such a different feeling, and I really found I didn't much like it. Some people, I think, are naturals at it, but, I could do it, but I really didn't kind of like the idea of somebody else taking me over, so I kind of gave it up, but anyway.
I just feel like somebody else's voice is coming through me. That's all I feel like. I don't get tired at all. As a matter of fact, from doing it and staying grounded, if I focus on just staying grounded and staying connected to the person, then... I'm actually so wired, it's like when I'm done, I can't go to sleep.
Yeah.
Because I work pretty late at night sometimes.
Well, I tend to think that might be it because I'm always bad about grounding. I've just been terrible.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of a guy thing. Anyway, but I am studying that book on mediumship, and it has a lot of good stuff in it, and it talked all about that. So I promise I'll put my hand up. And when I meet you, we can talk some more. I do have a question for you from Kathy. It says here, does she feel that you have to believe in a higher power to receive a reading?
No, not at all. Not at all. The only thing that I find is that when people are in resistance, it blocks the reading. You know, it does block the reading.
As far as
the higher power, you know, quantum physics is doing such a good job of, you know, getting close to proving the existence of a spiritual force that, I'm very respectful of other people's views, but, you know, it's like science is starting to prove it, you know? So it's about time for us to get on the bandwagon. I mean, it ain't a guy with a beard sitting on a cloud. We're not there anymore. But the information is still going to come through, and you can still get a lot of benefit from it, you know, whether you're looking at an inner child rescue or, you know, any of the other things that can come through in a session that are so important and so healing, you know, for all of us.
Well, with that, I'm going to thank you because we're coming up on the end of the show here. I really enjoyed this show, and you are a very, very good guest to have on, and I want to have you on again.
Anytime. I love doing radio. It's so much fun. I really enjoy it. And be sure to tell everybody about my website. It's www.terrijay.com so they can have a session. I'm cheap. I'm only $75 for a full-hour reading.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And it always covers multiple subjects too.
Okay. Well, we will be in touch soon with you then, talking about our upcoming case. And I'm going to go ahead and bring up that next week we're going to have Elizabeth Egan Cox, who's a paranormal author, a fiction author, who's also writing a book on grave art. You've ever been to cemeteries and seen all the different artwork out there? She's got a whole set of research she's done on that, so she'll be in to talk with us, and it'll be good to hear from her again. She's been a regular with us on occasion. And so, Terry, we're going to thank you for being on.
It was an honor.
And an honor to have you aboard. So with that, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We're going to be signing off, and I'll put a little music on to take us out. Maybe a little Danger Zone music, take it out that way, huh? Let's do it that way. Ticket number 50. And with that, goodbye, everybody. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio signing off.